From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Supermind. Here's what's happening. The Senate has approved legislation allowing families of 9/11 victims to sue the government of Saudi Arabia, defying a White House veto threat, as well as brazen threats of economic retaliation from Saudi Arabia. By a voice vote, senators approved the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. The bipartisan sponsors of the bill are now calling on the House to follow suit. Saudi Arabia's government has threatened to pull billions of dollars from the U.S. economy if this plan is enacted. The legislation gives victims' families the rights to sue in U.S. court for any role that elements of the Saudi government may have played in the 2001 attacks that killed thousands in New York, Washington, D.C., and Pennsylvania. Hillary Clinton squeezed out a cliffhanger victory over Bernie Sanders in Kentucky's Democratic primary Tuesday. I mean, it's really close. The Kentucky Senator, Secretary of State's office says that the precincts are all reporting she's got a very slim margin, so they're giving her Kentucky. Sanders, meanwhile, Bernie Sanders won the Oregon Democratic primary. Let's check in with Howard Bloom. Howard, I think Hillary's going to get the nomination, but boy, is Bernie hanging tough.
Well, Hillary's going to get it. There are problems with Bernie. There were basically small-scale riots in Nevada at a Democratic convention over the weekend, and the Democratic Party is very upset about that. But the bottom line of this election, this not just tonight, the whole election so far, is Donald Trump. He's passed this very strange tipping point, and it's a tipping point that says something vital about you and me. Trump has infected us with, George, get this, an addiction. We have a Trump addiction. Whether we love him or we hate him, we can't wait to see the next outrageous headline or the next attack from a head of state like England's Prime Minister David Cameron, who attacked him over the weekend. So from this point on, here's the weird part. Even negative publicity will be good publicity, but for only one man, for Donald Trump, and for Donald Trump only, not for Hillary. Why? Because Trump voters will take negative press as an attack from the bad guys, the liberal media and the Hillary fans. Now, an attack against the group that you and I belong to is a bonding force. It pulls us together around our leader. So attacks are going to rally the faithful around Trump. For example, you saw yesterday the New York Times did a story about Donald's use of 50 pretty young women as basically interior decor, as Trump girls. Well, that's only shown the faithful that the liberal media is out to get Trump. Meanwhile, the Donald's harem of 50 girls is added to his status as an alpha male, and it's turned him into the man millions of American males would just love to be. There's another attack, the Washington Post story yesterday, about Trump's connection to a mob informer. Well, to the faithful, that's going to prove that Donald can handle himself with all kinds of people, like tough people, the sort of people some folks feel you need to manage if you want to get things done. So, I mean, we've hit the Kardashian factor. We have passed the Kardashian factor. We've passed the peak of the celebrity effect with Donald Trump. And when I was working with Michael Jackson and Prince, you know, I headed the biggest PR firm.
Yes, you did.
The music industry. And when I was working with those guys, I preached to them that for years we were going to be rolling a stone up to the top of a mountain, and it was going to be hard work. But once we got up to the peak, that stone was going to start going down the other side on its own with a gathering momentum. And that's exactly what it happened with Prince, it happened with Michael Jackson, and it's happening in ways even beyond Prince and Michael Jackson with Donald Trump.
All right. Well said, Howard, by the way. What a great analogy. Consumer prices recorded their biggest increase in more than 3 years in April as gasoline and rents rose, pointing to a steady inflation buildup that could give the Federal Reserve ammunition to raise interest rates later this year. We shall see. The Senate has voted decisively in favor of a bipartisan $1.1 billion measure to combat the Zika virus this year and next, cutting back President Barack Obama's request, but offering significantly more money to fight Zika than would the House GOP conservatives. Dr. Gary Ridenour with us. Gary, I don't know about this situation. Can money fight Zika? I mean, they're just mosquitoes. They're infected. They're all over the place.
Well, George, it's an election year. A lot of that $1.1 billion is going to go out to friends of Hillary Clinton's companies for this election. The Ziekenstein virus is now in 66 countries and just appeared in Southeast Asia.
If you get bitten by a mosquito, not a baby in the womb, but if you get bitten by one of these Zika mosquitoes, infected mosquitoes, can anything happen to you?
Now, 4 out of 5 people will develop viral-like symptoms, rashes, not feel too good, may not even know about it at all. The fifth person will, you know, may have some neurological problems, or, of course, if we're pregnant, we know what's going on there. Well, we talked about that in 2014 and 15, that genetically modified mosquitoes were released in Brazil. Well, the epicenter of the outbreak of Zika was where we released those mosquitoes.
Can this virus mutate and get worse than it is now?
That's the problem. It just appeared in Southeast Asia. So you're going to have hundreds of millions of people exposed to this virus, and these people may be carrying other viruses, and it may cross-link with other viruses, and we may come out with a genetically modified virus.
Keep updating us, Gary. Thank you. A hallucinogenic chemical in magic mushrooms shows promise for people with untreatable depression, according to a study of just 12 people. 8 patients were no longer depressed after the mystical and spiritual experience induced by the drug. Authorities say a Massachusetts woman trying to fetch a pair of keys fell 3 stories into an apartment building's trash compactor that then turned on and mangled her leg. Police say a 19-year-old man accidentally dropped his keys down the trash chute at this multi-story building, offered the woman $20 to help him retrieve it. He tied a sheet to the woman and lowered her down the chute. The sheet ripped, sending her into the compactor where it mangled her leg. Jeez. And in a large-scale study of more than 2,000 people, British scientists have confirmed that thoughts do carry on after the heart stops. The research also showed and uncovered the most convincing evidence of an out-of-body experience for a patient declared dead. It had been believed that the brain stopped all activity 30 seconds after the heart had stopped pumping blood around the body. However, the study from the University of Southampton shows that people still experience awareness for up to 3 minutes after they had been pronounced dead. That's an amazing story. Up next, let's talk about free energy. Joel Garbin joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Joel Garbin has worked for more than 30 years internationally as an industrial science consultant, educator. He's the inventor and developer of several successful commercial technologies used with various major industries. He's the president of the not-for-profit New Energy Movement. Now, that educates people about breakthrough energy technologies and their implications for human society. Let's bring Joel on to Coast as we talk about his work, Breakthrough Power, How Quantum Leap New Energy Inventions Can Transform Our World. Joel, good to have you with us.
Hi, George. Great to be here with you tonight.
I have always wondered if the power brokers and the money people are fighting to keep this kind of energy away from us. What do you think?
Well, I think it's safe to say that for a long time there have been vested interests in the whole energy field that really don't want to see the advent of these very disruptive energy technologies. It really would cause quite a transformation in the way business is conducted. And as you know, energy is a multi-trillion dollar economy worldwide. And this would mean that there'd be a lot of changes afoot, and that's really not welcome. And it's well understood why. I mean, we all know what it's like to have a vested interest in our careers, in our livelihood, the security for our own families. And so I think very readily we see that, you know, people become afraid when they see that, hey, something may occur that's going to threaten how I earn my living. And I really don't want that change to occur. I think most people can identify with that.
And Joel, when you talk about new energy, what are you talking about?
Well, when people think about new energy technologies or clean technology, generally they're thinking about wind and solar, which get, you know, so much play nowadays, and certainly there's a lot of good things going on in those fields. But what new energy movement means when we talk about new energy technologies or breakthrough energy technologies are new forms of generating energy that go far beyond the conventional renewables. So these may be frontiers in physics, in new understandings. It may be learning how to finally measure and deploy forms of energy that have always existed, but now there's a technology platform to be able to convert that type of energy into something that's very recognizable and very usable.
Will new energy necessarily be free energy?
Well, not really. No more than the free wind that's blowing or the free sunshine that's beaming down on us is free. You have to have some type of technology platform to
right.
capture that free energy source and then transmit it into something usable like electrical current that's then fed through some type of infrastructure. Even if that infrastructure is just a solar panel on your roof, or if it's the power transmission lines that are coming from hundreds of miles away, there is technology, there is infrastructure, there are people involved in the process of manufacturing all of that equipment and infrastructure, or monitoring that, or servicing that. So there's a cost attached to that. But free energy, as it's normally discussed, is that, look, the sources that'll be tapped into are essentially infinite in their abundance. And therefore, the cost of energy will come down markedly to the point where it's almost insignificant. And that frees up a lot of human potential and capability to do some really amazing things on our planet.
We have been talking for a couple of years on this program now, Joel, about trying to protect and insulate our power grid from an EMP attack or a solar flare from the sun. Both are possibilities that could happen. And if our grid goes down, they're estimating that 90% of the Americans would all die within a year. That's unbelievable. Wouldn't it be great if we all had our own little power system, power source at our house and didn't have to rely on some company to do it?
Well, I agree, George. That definitely would be the holy grail of this whole endeavor. And I really applaud you for bringing attention to the fact that our grid is at serious risk from any number of problems that could take it down and cause a real disruption in the way our society works. We simply are not prepared to be able to handle when the electric grid was to go down all of the intricacies of the way our markets work, the delivery of goods, the way we rely on telecommunications or critical services to be performed. All these rely on grid power right now for the most part. Even the delivery of fuel for our vehicles, which people don't normally think is having anything to do with the grid. But what happens when you can't turn the pump on? Whether that is
That's
pumping
right.
the fuel into your fuel tank. So it's great that you brought attention to this. And yes, having decentralized power plants, and by power plant here, I mean maybe something that's the size of your cell phone or something the size of your laptop, a very small power plant that every individual or at least every home has, that definitely becomes the real prize of this whole endeavor to release breakthrough energy technologies and benefit a whole planet.
Could you really power a house with something that small, you think?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
Undoubtedly. Yes, undoubtedly. See, the forms of energy that are now being discovered, and again, these have existed for a long time, are very, very potent. They're very, very dense. And using the right technology platform and transforming these into an electrical current or thermal power, these are something that really can be done. I've seen demonstrations of certain technologies that have a very, very small footprint, a footprint like the size of a laptop or smaller, that are highly energetic. And it's a matter of engineering these things into something that would be a usable, practical device. That's one of the challenges that the inventor community is facing right now.
How did you get involved in this, Joel?
Well, it's a great question. When I was working in the chemical and pulp and paper industries back in the 80s and 90s, I was frequently flying down to South America, most notably to Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and doing consulting trips. And there was one night I remember flying over the Amazon, and you know, most of the plane seemed to be dead asleep. and I'm looking out the window, and there's just, you know, what you would typically see is just a mass of darkness down there where the Amazon is. But tonight, I could see fires. There were fires all over. And it just, it struck me. I had this just deep pain in my heart seeing this. And what immediately came to mind was, look, this is what all of these magazine covers are portraying, like National Geographic, Time Magazine. Back at that time, you would see a lot of these magazine covers talking about the plight of the slash and burn that was going on in the Amazon, and that there was real concern that this was going to devastate one of the lungs of the planet here, because so much of the oxygen is produced down there. Well, here I'm now having an opportunity to see this firsthand, and it really was coming to light that, you know, hey, this is not a fairy tale. This is going on. And what was very strange is all of these other witnesses who could have been seeing the same thing on this plane that had, you know, probably 200 people or more on it, they were all asleep. And so I'm looking at this, and the only thing I could feel to do, George, was to simply say a prayer. And it essentially was, what can I do with whatever skills I have, anything I could bring to bear to this? How can I help heal this? And that became a consistent prayer for quite some time. I would even say several years after that. And then there was one very distinct day when I had just all I can say is a personally profound mystical experience. I heard a voice. It was very clear, very distinct, not my own. And it said, you are to help bring a new form of energy to this planet. I was astonished.
An epiphany.
Yeah. Yes. I guess that'd be a good synonym for it. And in my astonishment, all I could think to say was, do you mean like solar energy? And if a voice could be said to smile, I perceived the smile in this voice, and it said, no, not solar energy, but you'll see. And then there was just this like electric wave that just overcame me. It was just this warm, intensely loving feeling, and it was just literally indescribable, and I know I'm struggling with it right now, but all I could feel to say was, yes, I will do this.
Are we talking cold fusion?
Well, ultimately, that became one of the technologies that I came into contact with and came to know several inventors working in that field. But the path first took me into the midst of a number of researchers who were helping to spread the word about these little known powerful energy technologies that were being developed in the labs and workspaces of inventors around the world, and the one who seemed to be a kind of at the center of bringing that attention to the public was Dr. Brian O'Leary, and Brian O'Leary at that point he was basically had convened a number of organizations that were largely technical in nature. And so they would have gatherings annually, and it was mostly a lot of scientists and researchers who were very, very interested in this field of breakthrough energy technologies. And those discussions really never broke out of that very small community. And when I met Brian in 2002, he invited me to join with them to establish a new type of organization that would take the message of new energy and its reality and the need for its urgent and serious support out to the public at large, and to educate, you know, the Joe and Mary public, to educate policymakers, the investment community, the media, that this is something that really needs the shoulders of everyone behind it, because we all had such a stake and how this would play out to help a planet in peril.
This suppression of breakthrough energy is being done by whom?
Well, I would say historically, there's probably been a combination of...
Hold that thought right there, Joel. We're going to hit the break, and I want to get a full comment from you on that, because that's a big part of this story. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I think that's one of the songs I'm going to be singing at our live stage event in St. Louis on June 18th. So come on out. Tickets are going like crazy. There's a month to go, and then that is it. Full details at coasttocoastam.com. You can get your tickets there, and if you're coming in from all over the region, it's going to be easy. If you're coming in from way out of different states, there's some great hotels all over the place, too, but it's going to be a great evening. June 18th, full details at coasttocoastam.com, live event in St. Louis. And then another one in August in Asheville, North Carolina. I'm going to be with paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren, ufologist Micah Hanks. Bill Forsten joins us to talk about EMPs and the power grid. So full details there also at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Joel Garbin and his book, Breakthrough Power. Joel, we were talking about the suppression of these technologies. I mean, there have been cases where some inventor has come up with something very innovative, and a big company comes and buys him out because they don't want it to hit the marketplace and quashes it, and you never hear from it again.
Well, that's true, George. I can give you an example of that that's not very well known. There's a Chilean inventor named Nelson Camus. This gentleman, a very brilliant man in all things electronic. And in 1992, at a technology expo down in Pasadena, he won the best of show with something called the urine battery. And it's as strange as it sounds, it was just what it sounds like. So basically, the urine was used as an electrolyte in the battery and produced sustained power. And he demonstrated this in one of the, you know, the GM EV1 electric vehicles. He had it retrofitted using his urine battery. He had a team of drivers drive the vehicle from San Francisco down to San Diego. And all they were doing was refilling the battery with you-know-what. And, you know, that was such a compelling demonstration that an oil company stepped forward, one we're all aware of. They did an exchange with him of $5 million for a 10-year license. The technology was essentially shelved and never came out again. And the inventor, as most of these inventors do, you know, took those funds and basically plowed it into more invention. And when I met Nelson, he was well on his way developing some other things, and very interesting story. And there's many other things about that particular gentleman that are fascinating as well. But that's one case like that. You know, certainly, you know, a lot of your audience would be familiar with the Tesla story and J.P. Morgan, the big banker,
absolutely,
and all that. And some would be familiar with Stan Meyer with his water-powered vehicle and those type of things.
Yeah, J.P. Morgan couldn't figure out how to make money off of Tesla, so he shelved him.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, a lot of these things, you know, our book Breakthrough Power, which I co-authored with Jean Manning, and, you know, Jean, for those who are familiar with her work, you know, Jean has just been prolific in her investigative reporting for over 30 years on this field of breakthrough energy technology. She had written a book in 1996 called The Coming Energy Revolution that highlighted a number of these inventors. And she'd made a prediction that by the year 2000, that we would start to see these advances, you know, out in the public domain. And it didn't happen. By the time Gene and I met after the New Energy Movement organization had been founded, she invited me to collaborate with her in 2007 to write a new book, which became Breakthrough Power. And we chronicle a number of the stories of these inventors and the challenges that some of these have had. You know, but what we, I think, largely have come to the conclusion on is that, you know, it's one thing to talk about what has happened historically and some of the suppression, but that really doesn't get us to where we need to go. You know, it's the suppression of something that threatens somebody's livelihood or their interest, that is as old as humanity. And it's something that's grounded in our fear-based thinking and our separation-mindedness from each other. And one of the things that encourages me and my colleagues is that as we've looked at things here over the last decade or so, we really believe that there's a change that's occurring, not only in what we're all palpably feeling and seeing as an awakening among the people at large, but we also are seeing a shift in these interests that may have used heavy-handed tactics in the past to threaten or confiscate, steal or destroy. Now we believe that the tactics are more about, okay, this new era of clean energy is dawning, and it's dawning rapidly. It's unavoidable. It's coming, and the wave is building. We may as well grab a surfboard and get on the wave and enjoy the ride. And so what we're seeing now is a lot of investment coming about in this breakthrough energy field. It's been quite targeted,
mm-hmm.
not nearly as widespread as what it needs to be, but we are definitely seeing strong interest. You mentioned the cold fusion field,
right,
George, which you know many now know it as maybe the more preferred term, which is LENR, which stands for low energy nuclear reactions. But this field was, what was inaugurated by two researchers, Fleshman and Pons, back in 1989, who were just roundly thumped by the mainstream academic community as engaging in junk science. But yet those discoveries of cold fusion were taken up and explored in further depth by just a tremendous number of researchers worldwide, very credible scientists in most cases, including at major academic institutions and inside our own national laboratories and inside our military and inside NASA. Okay, so here's all this research going on in the cold fusion field, which proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that the science is real. It's becoming much more robust, more replicable, and closer to commercialization. And there are some corporations like the Berluin Energy Corporation out of Berkeley. There's some others who are really helping to move that field forward with some very robust engineered prototypes that are getting closer and closer to commercial stage. And I think we're going to see, maybe within the next 3 years or so, we're going to see the deployment of the first industrial applications of some cold fusion technology.
That would be exciting.
Oh my gosh, yes, it's exciting. And I want to mention something else too. You know, Fleshman and Pons, both of whom are now deceased, all right, they endured a tremendous amount of persecution over an amazing discovery that science was not ready to look at in real honesty, okay, and they paid the price for that. And even one who's more local to where I live in Portland, Oregon, and there was one of the early researchers on cold fusion named Dr. John Dash, who was a professor at Portland State University. John was just this wonderful man, a real gentleman, at the very first New Energy Movement conference in Portland in 2004. He brought his physics students, to the conference, and he had them demonstrating a working cold fusion device. And that really helped open up the eyes of a lot of people who were attending that conference. And John just kept, you know, very quietly doing his research, but we lost him last month. So we're seeing that, you know, a lot of that you know, those first frontier researchers in the cold fusion field have passed before being able to see that glorious day when this thing's actually going to be in the public domain producing real power and really opening a lot of eyes. And I think it's going to sadly be some egg on the face of a lot of the researchers in mainstream science who simply refused to look at the mountains of data that have accumulated around a very legitimate science.
What's
poorly understood, everyone would agree, but legitimate in the fact that it produces real output thermal energy.
Would it be cheap for us?
Yes, it would be, George, because essentially what it's doing is using hydrogen or water as a fuel. Basically, the cold fusion process, and there are many variants of it, can take a number of different platforms. like Fleshman and Pons, it was essentially an electrolysis type of a process where you have a electrode in the water, and there's a process going on where hydrogen is getting into the electrode, and then there's a reaction occurring, and it's actually a nuclear reaction where you're getting some very small amount of the hydrogen fusing into helium, and it's releasing a tremendous amount of thermal energy. There are other processes as well, like the Berluin folks down in the Bay Area. Their process uses hydrogen and some nickel that's been plated onto some reactor rods, and they pulse an electronic energy into the device, small amount, and they get a large thermal pulse. And generally speaking, the types of technologies in this field that are working are getting about 3 to 4 times as much thermal energy out as the electrical energy that's going to the input side of the process. So that would be considered a coefficient of performance of approximately 3 to 4. And
that's not bad.
Wildly exciting. Yeah.
That's not bad. What about propulsion systems? We keep hearing, Joel, about an ability one day to be able to jet set from L.A. to New York in 40 minutes. What's going on there?
I think that also is going to go hand in hand with these advanced energy technologies. And look, George, here's something that I think, we need to soberly look at here. You know, when Operation Desert Storm happened back in 1991, and we went in, our forces went into Kuwait, to liberate the Kuwaitis. You know, it was the first time the public became aware of stealth aircraft. And 1 year after that war ended, so we're now talking, 1992, 1993, at the public air shows, there were stealth aircraft flying around at these air shows where the public could see these things flying overhead. All right, stealth aircraft. Now, if you accept that it's likely that there's at least 10 years of product development in the pipeline in these military aerospace projects, all right?
Yep.
And we've had since 1991 to where we are now, we've got approximately, 25 years plus a 10-year pipeline. That would mean that it's reasonable to expect that there is at least 35 years worth of technology in advance of stealth, all right? And given that all other areas of science are showing essentially an exponential curve as far as where we were, 35 years ago, if you look at telecommunications, you look at computing, you look at medical imaging technology, anything having to do with genetic manipulation, all that type of stuff, it's an exponential curve. We can expect that the same thing really is going on in the good stuff in military aerospace. So that would suggest that there is very advanced propulsion that exists, that there is very real advanced energy technology that already exists, but it's not yet rolling out into the public domain for a global scale social benefit and environmental benefit. And I think all of these folks who have great interest in the high probability that there is life scattered all throughout the universe, and as we all know, there's all these planets being discovered in the Goldilocks zones all throughout the visible universe now. It's really coming to light that, hey, it's likely we live in a very, very highly populated universe. And many of those cultures are going to be far in advance of human culture here on our little blue-green sphere. So what are they using for technology? And have they used it to travel interstellar distances and arrive, in our neighborhood?
They had to have.
Oh, I think it's absolutely the case.
Plus a better knowledge of physics, because I'm convinced they're bending space and time.
Yeah, they could be. They could be doing that. Or they could be doing some other things. You know, if you've got a culture that is many millions of years older than ours, they wouldn't necessarily have to do exotic, space bending and wormholes and all that kind of thing. They could be simply so old that they've had outposts in various places and gradually, working their way out And, you know, it may not have to be, you know, too terribly exotic as far as you know, how the physics of things works and time travel and warping
right.
space and all that kind of thing.
But they're going at light speed. They have to.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's certainly there'll be strange effects that are happening. But part of those strange effects would be that those occupants of those vehicles aren't going to age as rapidly. Right. So what
right.
we consider, you know, how long are those, you know, those space travelers, you know, how long are their lives going to be functionally to get from here to there? Well, it kind of changes the game a little bit, you know, but there's all kinds of amazing things that become possible when we contemplate that likely there's been advanced technology that has crossed our atmosphere here going back at least thousands of years. Personally, I've had a lot of interplay with not only sightings of various interesting things, but you know, a lot of elbow rubbing with the, you know, the leading researchers in the UFO ET field. And I'm just so thoroughly convinced that, you know, it's real. It exists. There's an opportunity for us to help to remediate a lot of the longstanding and, you know, just, well, critical issues on this planet, both for humanity and our companion species and the environment at large. And I think it's part of the ethical call when we hear about disclosure efforts. It's part of the ethical call to those who have been, you know, still pulling the curtain tight to let go.
Yeah.
Let go. Let this come out and unfold. And let it take its natural course. You know, no longer cling on to this. You know, it's all been fear-based and distrust of what will happen if people yield these secrets that the world at large is deserving to know about.
Well, they're petrified that they're going to lose industry and revenue and everything else, everything they've built.
But, George, every time there's a technical revolution,
new jobs,
everything
new
is lifted up. There's a boom in new innovation. Oh, whoever could have thought when you know, Gates and Jobs and all these other guys were you know, doing the hardware and software of microcomputing, that all these derivative businesses would spring up globally.
Exactly.
I mean, it's almost incalculable how many new jobs and just things that didn't exist, you know, occupations that people had, software engineers, systems analysts.
Well, I mean, you look at Amazon, and even though I'm convinced Amazon has hurt retail establishments, it has hired a lot of people.
Yes, it has. And it's evolving the market. It's changing it. Now, when that happens, there are dislocations that occur, and those are painful. And we have to have a tremendous amount of compassion and empathy for people who get squeezed when there's a technological
Correct.
Advance.
Especially if they're up in age.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And that's where, you know, we you know, part of the scariness and the fear about this new energy, you know, era that is upon us is that, you know, my God, what's this going to do? You know, if I got an oil well pumping on the back 40 and that's, you know, and that's grandma's, you know, stipend here and that's paying the bills. And might also be, you know, paying the college tuition for, you know, one of the grandkids. You know, what happens when all of a sudden, you know, these new energy technologies come along and oil goes from, you know, $48 where it is today to $4?
Stay with us, Joel. We're going to talk more about your work, Breakthrough Power, and we'll take phone calls next.